Welcome to episode 244 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today we have a Team GB focus as we chat with two British athletes having a breakthrough season in their different disciplines, plus we celebrate a new British world champion. As well as that, we have our regular snow reports, an update from European Gay Ski Week, competition news, and your feedback.
Now, my name's Ian Martin. I'd like to introduce my guests today. Both of them are first-timers on the show. Firstly, I'm delighted to be joined by Team GB slalom racer Molly Butler. Hi, Molly. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. Where are you today?
I'm in Bormio at the moment, racing in Santa Catarina for the British Nationals.
Mm, cool. Have you raced yet?
No, I haven't raced yet. I haven't actually got the speed skis out this season yet, and they were the races recently. The tech races start tomorrow, so I thought I'd have a bit of a just spectator watch today.
Will it be a really early start for you tomorrow morning then?
I don't think so. No, I think it's going to lift opens at 8:30, so pretty leisure start for skiers.
Okay, well, best of luck with that, and we'll come on to the racing a little bit later on. My second guest today also represents Team GB, but in the new Olympic discipline of ski mountaineering, something we're going to be finding out more about later in the show. I'm delighted to welcome another Ian to the show, Ian Innes. Hi, Ian, how are you?
Hi, good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Now, you told me just now in the green room that you're in Chamonix. I'm very jealous. It's one of my favourite places. How's it looking out the window today?
It's been blue skies all day, and then about half an hour ago, a storm started rolling through, but I think it's going to pass pretty quick.
Okay. Any snow in that storm?
Maybe up high, but definitely not in town.
A question I always like to ask my guests is, when did you ski or snowboard last? So, Molly, you're in a ski resort, and you're in the middle of the national championships. I'm guessing you're out this morning.
Yeah, I was out cruising about this morning. Yeah, it was pretty good day. It was Bluebird. And I explored the whole resort, which is something you don't actually get to do a lot as a racer.
Nice. So you weren't hitting gates for a change. Well, what about a snow report for Bormio then? How is it just now?
Yeah, it's actually probably, I mean, I've been in Austria for most of the season, and Italy's probably got about double the snow here. You can't see green anywhere. It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
Okay, that's very promising. What about yourself, Ian? You're also in a ski resort. When were you last on snow?
I also skied today. I ski most days. As for a snow report, everything up high is looking really good. The lower resorts in the valley, so La Zouche and La Tour, they're maybe on their last legs, but Grandmonte, Flagère, Brévent, all these areas, they're doing just fine.
Oh, and which bit of the mountain were you on today?
I was in La Zouche today. It's closing next week, so I thought I'd go and see the last of it.
Cool. Okay. Well, we do have some regular snow reports from around the Alps. We've got Alex Armand reporting from Les Des Alpes. Catherine Murphy has been out in Courchevel. And Robin, aka Big Mountain Bob, is currently ski touring in the Lyngen Alps in Norway. So let's have a listen to those.
Hi, this is Alex from Tip Top Ski Coaching with a weather report here from Les Des Alpes. With exciting news, late this afternoon it started snowing, even down in the village, and we are due 10 centimetres overnight from the village upwards, which is fantastic. And then the clouds will be clearing and we're looking at the rest of the week being nice and sunny. So that should be a fantastic start to most people's Easter holidays. And we're looking forward to seeing you here in Les Des Alpes in the near future.
How's it going, Ian? Catherine Murphy here in Courchevel 1650. Today I've been skiing the Three Valleys all the way from Courchevel through Meribel, Les Menuires, over to Val Thorens. Conditions on piste this morning were hard-packed corduroy, but within an hour or so, temperatures had risen, snow had softened up. I found some really nice grippy spring snow up on La Solire, which is the crossover point between Courchevel and Meribel. We were skiing to a high point of 3,000 metres today, and to be honest, across the slopes, I found conditions that I really enjoyed. Obviously, the lower you skied, the slushier it got. We skied all the way down to Meribel Centre today, and we skied some slushy bumps and tiring for the legs and perhaps challenging for intermediate skiers, but nothing too nasty or too unpleasant. Fair few families from the UK over here at the moment enjoying spring ski conditions and sunny weather. Now, there is no snow in the forecast for the Three Valleys for the next week. It looks like sunshine, maybe some cloud, relatively warm temperatures. As you know, the season in the Three Valleys lasts until late April, or in the case of Val Thorens, up until early May. It would be amazing if they get some fresh snow to take skiers right through to Easter, which is still a few weeks away. Let's wait and see. Resort bosses have said it has not been the best season here for snow, but as far as I'm concerned, they're doing pretty well with what they have.
Hi Ian, and greetings from the Lyngen Alps, just inside the Arctic Circle in northern Norway. I know you like to earn your turns, and April is here, which means prime ski touring season in one of the most breathtaking locations on the planet, where you can climb from sea to summit with stunning fjord views at every turn. After a stormy March, conditions have finally settled this week, delivering bluebird days and fantastic snow. Storgalten, one of Lyngen's iconic tours, was buzzing on Sunday, with several groups making the most of the perfect conditions. Monday brought calm skies, fewer crowds and deep, soft turns in the bowl between Sofiatinden and Soltinden. It was an absolute dream. Today, we hopped on the ferry to Olderdalen to ski Storhaugen, just above the Lyngen Lodge, soaking in incredible views back across the fjord to Lyngen. But change is coming. Tonight, a big storm system is moving in with strong winds and warm temperatures, making the next couple of days tricky. The good news, temperatures are set to drop again Thursday night, bringing the possibility of fresh powder and, fingers crossed, some sunshine for Friday and Saturday. Right now, the mountains are absolutely plastered in snow. So if you're heading to Lyngen this month, pray for more bluebird days and get ready to experience some of the most spectacular ski touring anywhere in the world. Back to you, Ian.
And then I'm going to drop those snow reports in. Don't forget, if you want to help the Ski Podcast and save yourself some money this winter, all you need to do is use the code SKIPODCAST when you book your ski hire at intersportrent.com. I'd like to thank everyone who's used that link already this season. Quite simply, it helps fund the podcast and I appreciate it. Simply use the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied. Also, just a reminder, we have a competition going on at the moment. If you'd like to win some Velon Watchtower sunglasses, all you need to do is leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or write a comment on Spotify or Instagram. Thanks to everyone who's entered already. Make sure you listen to our next episode when I will be announcing the winner. Of the next episode, after producing an episode of the podcast every week for the last 7 months, I'm going to take the chance to breathe a little bit and go on to a fortnightly schedule through summer. So our next episode, 245, will go live on the 18th of April, and then we'll be fortnightly from then through the summer until we get into September again. Now, regular listeners might recall Matt Ware joined us in episode 232, talk about European Gay Ski Week in Val Thorens. He promised to bring us a report on that week, and I'm delighted to say we have that from him now, so let's have a listen to that.
Hello, listener. This is Matt Ware reporting from the European Gay Ski Week. We are at the final après-ski of the week. We've had an amazing week, but you don't want to hear it from me. Let me introduce you to some of our amazing special guests that we've been skiing with this week. So here, first of all, we have
Mark from Australia. We have flown 36 hours to be here today. It has been amazing this week. Matt has been incredible, showing us around this fabulous area. And now I'm freezing my ass off because Australians aren't used to negative degrees, but it's about unbelievable. Let's go to the next person.
Hi, I'm Francois from Canada, French part of Canada. I'm coming here for the skis for sure, but also for the party, and it's really, really great.
I'm Eamon, I'm from Ireland. This is my second Gay Ski Week. It's a great place to meet friends, do some amazing skiing, and a lot of partying.
Hi, I'm Russell from Leeds, England. The skiing has been amazing, the guiding has been amazing, the parties have been amazing, just literally amazing.
Okay, so listener, that's our report from the European Gay Ski Week. Anybody who wants to come next year, we had 40 new beginners this year. Lots of people come for their first time. It's an amazing week and everyone is very welcome.
Well, that sounded brilliant. Thanks to Matt for that. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Britain has a new world champion. I'm delighted to report that Zoe Atkin won gold in the ski halfpipe at the Freestyle World Championships in Samritz last week. Zoe was in sixth place going into her second and final run, but pulled off the highest score of the day to jump up to first. She has previously won silver and bronze at the Worlds, so she's now completed the set. Now, long-term listeners will remember I interviewed Zoe earlier this season in episode 238, and during that interview, I asked her about her second run strategy. So let's have a listen to that.
So do you play kind of percentages for that first run down in the final? Let's say, you know, you've got a certain routine that's going to get you a certain score, assuming you pull it all off, put that down first to get you on the leaderboard and then hold back your high scoring tricks for later.
Yeah, totally. I think there's definitely a bunch of strategy in it, because you obviously want to land a run to be able to, you know, build your confidence for the next run and obviously just to do well. But, you know, you want to do as well as possible. And then maybe your hardest stuff you don't have like as locked, or there's a little bit of doubt of like, maybe I might miss a grab, or maybe I'll fall, or maybe it won't be perfect. So there's always kind of that like more, I don't know, it's a little more risky. So usually my strategy is to put one down that I'm confident with and then build on that and let that kind of build my confidence and momentum. But sometimes, you know, someone might see that as like a waste of a run. If it's not a good enough run to, for example, like land me on the podium, it's like, why are you doing that? You should spend your three tries getting that harder run. But I think it's also kind of like a question of like, I guess, like what skier do you want to be, or what kind of skiing do you want to like show off to people watching? And for me, I feel like I want to be the kind of skier that's smooth and styly and has good grabs and like not flaily. And I feel like if I have to tone down the technicality to have just a very clean run, I personally prefer that, because that's just the kind of skiing that I want to represent. But then there's definitely people who are doing harder tricks or bigger tricks.
I'll put a link to that interview in the show notes if you'd like to find out more about Britain's latest world champion. Zoe's medal was one of two for Team GB, and Charlotte Banks took silver in the snowball cross. But it's a mark of how well this season has gone for GB Snowsport. The team will probably be slightly disappointed, as Mia Brooks, who won the Crystal Globe, picked up seven podiums this season, only finished fifth in the snowball big air and sixth in the slopestyle. But Mia still remains a great prospect for a medal at next year's Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. And after coming home with nothing from Beijing, you can be sure that GB Snowsport would be delighted if the team could bring back two medals from Italy.
Right, we're going to move on to Molly now. Dave Riding finished in the top 15 again this season. He's now 38 years old. But, you know, listeners, if they listen to my interview with him in episode 199, you know he rates that new generation coming through. In that conversation, we spoke about Billy Major. He got his first top 10 this season. Laurie Taylor and the Carrick-Smith brothers, regular listeners will know they're knocking at the door, and the Ski Podcast is giving them some financial support. But what you might not know is there's also a young generation of female slalom racers coming through as well. And that's why I'm delighted to welcome Molly on the podcast today. You're only 18, Molly. I was looking at your FIS page earlier, trying to check on your progress. And it looked to me like you've pushed your world ranking up from the 500s to the 150s since the start of last season. You must be pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. Obviously, always wanting more, but obviously learning to love the process as we do it. But I think it was meant to be a little bit lower, because there's actually been a few retirements from girls. So it's slowly lowering a little bit. But obviously constantly looking to lower it even more.
In this context, lowering is actually an improvement, and it has been a rapid improvement. I mean, when I've spoken to Dave before, we talk about the value of experience. If you look at his early results when he was your age and significantly older, he really wasn't producing great results at all. But over the years, particularly in something really, you know, technical, but also you see it in the speed events as well, that experience is really important. But your improvement meant that through this season, I think you started on the Europa Cup circuit this year for the first time. But by mid-season, things have progressed so well that you came into the World Championships in Saalbach.
Yeah, I did, which was probably one of the best experiences of my entire life. It literally proved that, oh my God, I am so in the right. Like, I've just got the best life ever. And it was amazing.
How did you find out that you had a place at the World Championships then?
Honestly, it's not an interesting story. And it's actually a little, I'm not really sure what happened. It was an Instagram post.
Well, they tagged you and you discovered like that.
They were. There was a list of the participants, obviously, from Great Britain. And I knew that I was picked. I knew that I was in consideration, but it was on the screen. It was on the screen on the post and my name was there. And I was like, OK, cool.
And the World Championships itself then, what were you competing in and how did it go?
Yeah, so I was competing in the giant slalom and the slalom. The giant slalom, I was starting pretty far at the back. My points are obviously a little bit higher in that. And the snow certainly wasn't great at all. Nonetheless, had some good splits, had some good turns, had the best time ever. But obviously, I need more work on my GS. It's been quite a slalom dominant season. And in the slalom, yeah, it was a pretty cracking run. But unfortunately, I came out just after the last split, and I had 2 seconds to lose on the last 10 gates. So we were pretty hopeful for a top 30 finish and a flip. But obviously, the universe wanted me to, you know, a bit more character building.
Well, it also, I guess the point I'm making, that as an 18-year-old, it's your first experience in the World Championships, and we talk about top level of racing and something you referred to there. I'm not sure that all listeners will necessarily understand that, but your start number is determined by your FIS ranking, right? So in those races, you would have had, you know, a pretty late start. It would have been quite rutted by the time you got to get on the course.
Yeah, extremely, especially for the giant slalom. The slalom, I'm more confident with dealing with ruts in slalom. But in GS, yeah, there was certainly quite a lot of terrain to deal with.
At those events themselves then, you know, often you're in your own training group, and we'll come to that a little bit later on. But were you all together? Were you mixing as a team? So therefore, were you hanging out with, I don't know, Dave and Billy and, you know, the other racers who I've interviewed a few times before?
Yeah, a little bit. Because obviously all the GB athletes are pretty separate, it can be a little bit difficult to come together once you've been used to that separation. No, obviously all the other female athletes I'm really close with. And obviously it was great to see Dave, Billy and Laurie there. And Dave is like one of the biggest inspirations to me. I think he's just amazing. And to see as he came fourth there and to see that live in the finish was pretty, pretty amazing. So yeah, we do have some sort of team network. So yeah.
And you mentioned the other racers. I know that Reese Bell, who is Martin Bell's daughter. Listeners, you know, quite recall, I've interviewed Martin Bell on the podcast before. He and Graham Bell were racing for Team GB in the downhill back in the day. His daughter is now racing slalom in the kind of same category. Is she roughly, she's a bit older than you, I think, isn't she?
Yeah, I'm 18. I think Reese is 24, 23.
But you're racing together as part of Team GB?
Yeah, we're all racing together, and I've seen Reese on the Europa Cup circuit for pretty all the races that I've been to and all the races that she's been to. Yeah, so I've been racing with her pretty much all season.
Oh, and you know, I mentioned your training. So am I right in thinking that you train in a group with the Carrick Smith boys? Their mum, Emma Carrick Anderson, is your coach?
Yeah, so it's, yeah, so I train with the three brothers, and Emma is also my coach, along with Phil Smith, her husband. And it's been like that full time for about the last 5 years now. But no, we've been training together since we were about 8, 9, I want to say. Pretty young, maybe even younger, 7.
And does that mean, because they were brought up in France, does that mean you were brought up in France? Or how did you get into skiing and into racing in the UK system? Or do you have parents who live out in France?
No, yeah. So it was pretty much the same as the Carrick Smith brothers, I suppose. I was raised in France. I did have my mum had a place in the UK, but no, it was a lot of the time in France, and we did the schooling system there and the ski club system there until I was second year under 16, so I was 15 because my birthday is in June. And yeah, so that's kind of how skiing came about. My parents owned a ski instructional business, and I don't know, when I was younger, instead of shoving me in creche, my mum just shoved me in one of her lessons. So I'd be tagging along with some of these people who'd come on holiday and want to learn how to ski, and I'd be a little four-year-old just tagging along in the back.
That probably you'd be one of those who, to most British minds, might be the really annoying or possibly very impressive four-year-old who's incredibly good at skiing by that time. What resort and ski school was that then?
Well, the resort was Megève, so it's about an hour away from Val d'Isère, and also an hour away from Geneva, so the airport. So it's quite good for a holiday instructional business. I mean, I remember seeing Tessa Worley race outside our hotel, and I just thought, oh my gosh, that is the coolest thing ever. That has to be me. And the rest kind of played out.
Yeah. Okay. And so they're from Teen. So I think they were from Teen. They're maybe from La Rosia now. So you ended up training with them. And right now then, so you train as a group through the year. You obviously go off and do your different races. I think listeners have sent in questions before when I've talked to Zach and Luca and Freddie about their training. A lot of listeners are really interested in what kind of training you do, because evidently if it's training for slalom, yeah, you're going to ski gates, but you focusing on different things within that? Will there be times where Emma is, you know, saying to you, right, I really want you to think about this?
We coach in quite a different way, and we're kind of learning to develop in quite a different way. So we're not very technical at all. And the quote that Phil, her husband, our other coach, always likes to use is when Hermann Meyer got asked, oh, what are you thinking about when you're going 130 kilometers an hour? And he said, oh, going faster. And so really the only thing that you've got to think about in a course is going faster. So why try and overcomplicate it with all these technical terms? And that just works for us.
I like that. I like that answer. What about, I think another thing listeners are always interested in, evidently as a racer, you need to be able to ski gates and you need to be able to ski gates fast like Hermann Meyer. But what about the other sort of training that you do outside of just on the snow itself in terms of strength and conditioning and aerobic? What kind of sessions are you doing there?
Yeah, I mean, the coaches always say that winter athletes are made in the summer, and it is very, very, very true. Because if you're not strong enough for the winter, then you're not going to perform. So we do a lot of strength and conditioning and a lot of aerobic, and a lot of it is consisted of intervals, because going down a 50-gate slalom course, if you're not really dying and out of breath, that's when you know that you're fit enough. So we do personally, obviously it's different with the men, but personally I do about 3 strength and conditioning sessions a week, and then I do 2 interval cardio sessions, so they can be really, really strenuous or longer, so for over an hour. And then Sunday is a rest day. So.
And those interval sessions, is that running or on a bike?
It used to just be on a bike, because I did cross country in secondary school and I learned to hate it, running. So for the last 2 years, I was just doing biking. But now I learned to gain my love for running again instead of hating it.
Okay, because, you know, I'm a keen runner as well, but I did my own interval session this morning. I was down at my local track doing 800s. What kind of a period are you looking for? Like, if you're doing a slalom race, they take about a minute, right? Is that right? So is those the intervals you're trying to replicate?
Yeah, so my favourite interval session is you do 1 minute on, 30 seconds off, 6 times. You do 3 rounds of those with 2 minutes in between each one.
How long are you going to be doing that for?
Well, that one should be done twice a week. So in the summer months, because if you're doing that in the winter, it's quite hard to keep up kind of that specific fitness in the winter, because you feel a little bit, your legs won't be at 100% the next day. So that's pretty knackering. That's pretty hardcore training in the summer, but you've got to love it.
Yeah, sure. And you're doing that on a static bike then? And is Emma kind of standing over you with a stopwatch measuring everything?
No. So if I'm a bit of a weird one in the gym. I like being alone. If I'm not with a personal trainer, so I have a personal trainer 3 times a week, which is when I do my strength and conditioning. When I'm doing my aerobic, I really like doing it alone, because then you can get, you know, visualization going by yourself, music on. And no, I just keep track on my phone.
Cool. Well, you've got to be motivated to be able to do those sessions. And, you know, you described there about the work that you do and the training. I guess a key point for everyone who's on the circuit, whether it's Dave Riding or yourself or someone who's aspiring to, you know, get onto the circuit, are the financial challenges. What are those financial challenges for you? Have you found it easy, difficult to find sponsors to help you fund the whole thing?
Honestly, yes, very, very difficult. Well, skiing isn't a cheap sport, so that was problem number one. I mean, this summer, we're really hoping to go down to the Southern Hemisphere, Argentina and Chile. And purely just getting down there with, 12 sets of skis, gates, all the luggage, accommodation, it adds up quite drastically. Yeah, so that can definitely take a toll on my mum, who is I call her my manager now, and she was also in the gate, well, she's always in the gate with me, but she was also in the gate with me in Saalbach for the World Champs. And that does put quite a lot of pressure on my mum. But again, it's all character building, and in the end, it just makes you stronger.
Are you getting support from GB Snow Sport at the Europa Cup level?
No, we are not. We do get our kit, so we get all of our kit free. We get our cat suits, jackets, all of that is covered, which is incredible. But in terms of travel, accommodation, and other things that can be covered, no, we are all self-funded.
For sure. Well, unfortunately, we're aware that's the case. I think GB Snow Sport have been working hard and trying to hit some of those like high net wealth individuals and get some more sponsorship from them. But from talking to Dave, I think at the beginning of this season, it was kind of touch and go. He's sharing out some of the money. It was notionally ring fenced for him to help the other athletes keep on the circuit. But thinking then, I'm visualizing your summer now, lots of strength and conditioning, lots of intervals on the bike. This has been your first year on the Europa Cup level, which again, for listeners to understand, it's kind of almost like the championship to the premiership as far as football is concerned. It's the next level, or the next level up would be the World Cup. What are your goals for next season then?
Yeah, so next season, obviously I'm just looking to build on what I have this season. This season has been a bit of an eye-opener for me because I haven't really thought about results whatsoever. I've just thought about let's have an amazing run. And then the results just come with that. Obviously they matter to a certain extent. But yeah, next season, just building on what I've built this season. The whole of the Europa Cup circuit in both slalom and giant slalom. And I was hoping this season, but I haven't had a spot, but I'd also like to compete in a couple of World Cups. I think that the Europa Cups really prep you for that, with a lot bigger field and having the world champs under my belt. I think that I've got enough maturity and I feel confident enough in myself to think that I could do them and perform really well in them also.
Well, I mean, a first season where you've gone to the World Championships, as you did. And I think, and you also took part in the World Junior Ski Championships as well. I think they were in Telvisio and you produced some pretty good results there as well. And that's at a higher level. And that must have helped for your confidence.
Yeah. The giant slalom, again, I didn't quite perform. I've got to get my points down a little bit more to get my start bit to even give myself a chance in it. But that's okay, I will. And in the slalom, yeah, it was a solid first run. And then in the second run, I was going really well. And I did the exact same thing that I did at World Champs. I caught my own side and I was out. But again, the skiing is there. And actually in a team combined, which is one run Super G, one run slalom, I had the third quickest time that day. And yes, I was really proud of that run. I've made some good turns this year.
Sure. Well, congratulations on your first year on the circuit and particularly for that selection for the World Championships, and look forward to following how it all goes for next season. And we'll be following the Carrick-Smith brothers as well. And sure, maybe we can get you all to do an update if you're out there together somewhere. That's brilliant, Molly. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Right, I'm going to move on to Ian now, if that's okay. We're going to come on to what ski mountaineering is in a minute, because I think some of our listeners might not be aware. But am I right in thinking that you also raced slalom and GS for some time for GB Snow Sport?
Yeah, that's right. I grew up as an alpine skier, alpine raced until I was 21, and now I'm 26, so stopped 5 years ago.
Yeah, and am I also right? I was trying to kind of do my research and track this down, but Molly was brought up in the French Alps, and you have a kind of were you brought up in the French Alps as well, or you got some connection to France?
Not quite. We spent 2 years in France from when I was 10 till 12 years old, and that was up near Strasbourg, so our nearest mountains were the Vosges mountains, which were I would say comparable to the Scottish mountains. It was definitely closer for us to get to the Alps than it was from home in Edinburgh for that 2 year period. But I think more than anything, just the contacts we made, the local French team had a really, really good coach and also lots of other great athletes. And so that was probably the biggest thing for me.
So you're basing yourself now in Chamonix for training purposes, but some listeners might actually recognise your name, if not Ski Mountaineering, from a feature that you did on Ski Sunday earlier this season. I think you took Shemi on a ski mo lesson. So for those who didn't see that, I wondered if you could just tell us what ski mo or ski mountaineering is.
Of course, ski mountaineering traditionally is mountaineering on skis. The Olympic disciplines, which are probably what people are most interested now, are super short, fast-paced, climbs and descents done on skis. So like a pair of touring skis, but much lighter, and the athletes go much faster. The sprint discipline's around 3 minutes long. So one climb, one descent, when the mixed relay is raced in pairs, one male, one female from the same country. And yeah, in a relay format, that race is more like 7 or 8 minute laps, whereas the sprint, yeah, is just 3 minutes.
I guess to summarize that, we're kind of talking about ski touring, but it's against the clock and it includes the descent as well. I think one of the amazing things is I was out in Selva Val Gardena. Listeners will remember that from a previous episode 242. And while I was there, they held the Celeronda Marathon. They were doing that in pairs. And I was watching a couple of them, you know, in the lead up to the race, doing a bit of practicing. It's unbelievable, the massive difference between, let's say, ski touring and ski mountaineering. How quickly athletes can get those skins off the bottom of their skis. It just seems incredible. It's like one movement without taking the skis off at all.
Yeah, absolutely. The clock doesn't stop while you're putting your skins on or taking your skins off or putting your skis on your rucksack or any of these transitions, we call them. That's part of the race. And so if it takes you a minute to take your skins off, but it takes one of your competitors 10 seconds to take them off, you've got an extra 50 seconds of work to catch up with them on the next climb. So it's definitely a big part of the sport.
I've done quite a few triathlons in my time, and I'm very mindful of the fact that the transition is a way that you can gain time. I'm guessing you practice literally that transition itself as well as the actual physical activity.
Yeah. So like I said, there's quite a few transitions. You've got skins on, skins off, skis onto your rucksack, skis off your rucksack. So lots of us will do sessions that are just purely transitions.
And so why Skimo then? You were racing slalom and GS before. What led you to ski mountaineering?
I guess if we think about ski mountaineering in the traditional sense, so not just Skimo racing, but mountaineering on skis, that's something I've done for a long time. I've started ski touring as a ski racer. Like Molly mentioned earlier, we spend a lot of time on the same piste in each resort. And I was always curious and my eyes were always looking at the bigger mountains. And yeah, quite often after training, I'd be out skiing again, off-piste or touring. Gradually, the stuff that I wanted to ski got further backcountry, steeper, more interesting. And I guess that's how I got into recreational ski mountaineering, competitive Skimo racing. So the faster stuff on lightweight skis, that came about a year and a half ago. I'm a keen runner. I do quite a bit of trail running in summer. This is basically just winter trail running or trail running on skis. It's very similar. It's fast paced up and down the hills, and you'll find lots of the top trail running athletes in summer spend their winters doing Skimo racing.
For sure. I mean, I have only done, I guess I've done a few races. In Courchevel, they have a weekly race that goes from La Prat up to 1850, which I've
every
done
Wednesday night.
Yeah, exactly. The Plum Vertical K, I think it is. And then I also did a triathlon in Courchevel a couple of years ago, which I hold around this time of year, where you cycle from the bottom near Bazel up to 1850. Then you do a trail run in 1850 and then you ski tour up to Salia. So kind of been, you know, verging on that side of things. I love the competitive side of things. But, you know, I'm also into trail running. And since I found out that Kilian Jornet spends a lot of every winter ski touring for his fitness, and that's what, you know, made me more interested in it. It sounds like that has kind of been a factor for you as well, maybe.
Yeah, well, speaking about Kilian, for example, what most people don't know about Kilian is Kilian was first a skier and started running to train for skiing, and then obviously was quite good at running. But yeah, I guess most people think it's the other way around. He's very well known for his running achievements. But yeah, he was a ski mountaineer. He's raced on lots of the courses that I've been racing on. There's lots of other examples. Remy Bonnet, for example, who's a very strong runner, particularly in the Golden Trail Series at the minute. He's also winning all of our World Cups. So lots of crossover.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I was discussing with Molly earlier the type of training that she does. You know, she's very interested in anaerobic intervals and, you know, working hard and doing strength and conditioning as well. And guessing yours, you mentioned that, you know, there's a crossover with your trail running. It's much more about that endurance, is it? Because you talked about the sprint races, which did you say that they can take just 3 minutes? So that's pretty intense exercise for 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. The shortest races are just 3 minutes. I guess compared to Molly's training, there is, or at least for me, maybe less technical training and more on the physical side. The biggest place you can make an improvement is how fast you can go uphill. You do still have to train your downhill. You do still have to practice your transitions, but most of the training is cardio based. And like the majority of people who train for an endurance sport, maybe 80% of that is zone 2 heart rate training, and 20% of that is harder, shorter, faster stuff.
And are you coached or are you self-coached on your journey?
Self-coached. We don't have any coaches right now.
Yeah. Are you getting any support from, and I'll ask this question to Molly, are you getting any support from GB Snowsport?
So GB Snowsport isn't our governing body. The governing body for SkiMo is the British Mountaineering Council. We have had small amount of support, you know, less than 10% of my season's cost, to give you a rough idea. I have received part of a BOA grant, again, less than 10% of my season's cost. The vast majority of my funding comes from Tillicutri Quarries, who are my helmet sponsor, and the remainder I fund myself.
That's great that you do have a sponsor. And listeners, if you happen to be wanting to support British athletes, well, both Molly and Ian would welcome contact from you, I'm sure. One of the reasons SkiMo has definitely lifted in profile is that for the Milan Cortina Winter Olympics, which is going to be taking place in less than a year's time, it's a new sport there. I think the Italians can choose, or the hosts can choose, to bring in a demonstration sport. They're very strong in ski mountaineering, so they've decided to bring ski mountaineering in. What do you need to qualify to be able to take part in that?
The qualification system is not straightforward. I'm going to dumb it down a little bit, but it's important to remember it's a bit more complicated than this. There is 16 quotas available. A quota is one man and one woman. So that means a maximum of 16 men worldwide and 16 women worldwide can go. On top of that, Italy has a double quota because they're the host nation. Based on World Champs results 2 or 3 weeks ago, France, Italy, Switzerland, most of the big Alpine nations have unlocked a double quota. There's also a continental bias so that the whole world is represented. So that means Asia is guaranteed a quota, the Americas are guaranteed a quota, Oceania is guaranteed a quota. That leaves maybe 3 or 4 quotas left for us and I guess most of the other smaller European nations to fight for. So it's not going to be easy and it's definitely not guaranteed, but we're putting everything into it.
So therefore, is it about a world ranking? Is that what will determine whether you get offered a place?
Yes, it's not so much about my world ranking, but more about Britain's ranking. That's why we've put quite a lot of focus on the mixed relay this year, which is the best way to improve our nation's ranking. So right now, Britain is ranked 17th.
Right. Okay, that's really interesting because I did look up what events are going to be taking place at those Winter Olympics. And I can see that you mentioned the sprint will be on, but there's also a mixed team relay. And I wondered if we have female SkiMo athletes as well, and if we're looking to enter a team in that. I think from what you're saying is the answer is yes.
Yes, absolutely. We've raced all the mixed relay World Cups this year. My partner's name is Claudia Szmielowska, and we are racing a mixed relay in Vilar next week, next World Cup. That'll be the last World Cup of this season. And then the first World Cup of next season, which is in December, we don't actually know where it is yet, is the final race of the Olympic qualification period. So we have 2 more chances to qualify Britain, basically.
And you said the sprint is a simple, I say simple, it's obviously not simple, but a simple up and down, whereas the mixed team relay is a different format. What's the format for that?
It's similar style, but it's quite short. If you like, a mixed relay is almost like 2 sprint laps back to back, and that counts as one overall lap. So it would go 1 female lap, 1 male lap, 1 female lap, 1 male lap. And so total race time is between 30 and 40 minutes.
Right, interesting. A lot of tactics in there as well. It sounds a bit like how they've done the mixed team relay and the triathlon at the Olympics as well. So you can decide, you know, who you're going to send first, etc. Well, Ian, I will definitely be following your progress, and I wish you the best of luck next week. Yeah, in Villar. Best of luck with that event there, and let's hope their team get up into the rankings and you can get that place. I will definitely be supporting you. Thanks so much for sharing all of that with us today.
Thank you.
Now, listener, I enjoy all feedback about the show. I'm always interested to hear what you think. So please do contact me on social at The Ski Podcast or by email, theskipodcast@gmail.com. We have had a bit of feedback since the last episode. Billy Mohan said, loved episode 243. That was the interview with the guys who went going east, traveling by train all the way to Turkey. Sean Douglas said, hugely appreciate your work to keep all the sustainability improvements taking place across Europe. Andrew Routledge said, love the show. It's so much more than this is a nice place to ski. Keep on keeping us informed, inspired, as well as entertained. And James Rice said, just wanted to shoot you a quick note to say I enjoyed your episode with Stuart on his Storm Skiing podcast. And listener, I've shared this on social, but if you'd like to hear me being interviewed instead of interviewing for a change, this is on a US podcast called The Storm Skiing Podcast with Stuart Winchester. There are now 256 episodes of The Ski Podcast to catch up with. 130 of those are listened to in the last week. If you enjoyed this episode, why not go to skipodcast.com, look around the tags and categories. There is bound to be something of interest in there to you. In the last week, just over half of our listeners were in the UK, next most in the States, and everyone else spread as far and wide as Morocco, Sri Lanka, and Brazil. And if you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. Follow us. You can give us a review or leave a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and that will obviously enter you in the draw to win those Vallon sunnies. And you can book your ski hire with InSport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. You can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at Ski Podcast. You can follow us on WhatsApp as well for exclusive material released ahead of the podcast. Look in the show notes for that link. Otherwise, I'd like to thank my guest today, Molly. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Excellent. And Ian, thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.